The brothers Wiss. The brothers Wiss, brothers Wiss. The brothers Wiss. The brothers.
You're now listening to Greg. It's the Brothers Wisp.
Hey, everybody. This is Greg with the Brothers Wisp, number 146. Man, that all kind of jumbled together. I'm coming at you from College Station, Texas, as per usual. Actually, we're recording this a couple of few days early. I got some shenanigans I got to get up to this weekend, unfortunately. So these kind fellows decided to jump on and talk to us. Kind fellow number one, Tommy Krogan from Colorado.
Hey, guys.
Hey. And then we also have Nick Arellano down here from, where are you? I always forget, and I would never remember.
Illinois. Just say Chicagoland. Remember, I'm by Mikey.
Are you close enough to actually say Chicagoland?
Not at all.
Okay.
I'm like 2 hours away. 2.5 hours.
All right. So you're not even close. Whatever. I knew you were in Illinois. I just didn't know where, because I can never remember. South of Mikey.
That's what you can say.
That's almost everybody, though, so. I mean, technically.
Anyway. More than half the United States.
Mm-hmm. All right, so let's see, what do we got? No new patrons this go around, but having spoken of that, you go to patreon.com/brotherswiss, and you become a patron, and you get access to the patron-only Slack, which is where I constantly harangue these guys to jump in on the podcast. Really, you're just kind of, I don't know, it's more of an indentured servitude, I guess, becoming part of the Slack, and then you're forced to come on these things and trudge through my nonsensory. But having said that, we also have some sponsors. So we have Sonar.software, longtime supporter, brought to you by Sonar, a scalable, intuitive, and comprehensive ISP billing and operational support system. Learn more at Sonar.software. What else do we have? We have Tower Coverage. Tower Coverage is your RF propagation system to empower your network, real-time data metrics, enable your coverage area, reaching your customer base, and more. The industry's best RF propagation mapping system allows website integration for customer sign-up and pre-qualification. Use this data to scientifically plan network expansion and help your WISP succeed. Get a free trial today at towercoverage.com. .com. That's what I always think when I say that. I sing it in my head, by the way. No, I sang it out loud. Good for you guys. All right, let's do the thing. I was late to the party. I've been kind of cramming everything in right here at the last minute. And so I kind of just put a note that said put stuff here, and I figured we'd figure it out. I figured we'd build our parachute on the way down, like as we jumped out of the plane. But Tommy was kind enough to put a whole bunch of notes together. I guess first things first would be Wispapalooza. Because that was kind of a big one. Did you go, Nick, or am I crazy? No, you didn't.
You were just
talking about stuff like you were there, I guess.
No, I had some proxies at the location asking specific questions that I would have asked if I was there.
Oh, that's what it was.
Yeah.
You got a guy for that. I get it. That makes sense. All right. Well, Tommy Krogan, T-Cent All-Star, you were there.
Yep, was there. It was a blast. It was a slightly smaller than 2019 show. a lot of different what do they call them? Sessions. Seemed like those were pretty well put together. The broadband funding ones were the most interesting to me. Although I'd read all the documentation, so it was a little bit of a let down there, but it was pretty good stuff all there. But I would say if you have like a new guy and you want to give him like, this is what the industry is trying to do, and like a fast track of here's basics of core principles of the industry, you're going to get a lot of that at Wispapalooza. And also just a general like, hey, here's what the products are like. I've been spending a last month and a half trying to figure out, oh, hey, you know, what's all this Cambium stuff? Like, which Cambium access point for which subscriber module, and, you know, what fits where? And I just went there and talked to the guys who sell it and talked to the guys who make it. And you're going to have a lot of really great info there. Just the socializing, really. That's what I was there for, is be able to talk to guys who are doing this stuff every day, and you're going to get a lot of views, ideas, thoughts, and stuff that's really, really valuable in my opinion, and really helps you like say, oh yeah, this is, you know, this is definitely, you know, a concept I need to be out and understanding, versus just being stuck in your own little world of, hey, this is what you're dealing with. But you can see how other guys have solved the same problems.
For sure. I think you guys that are like social butterflies, like you and Nick Arellano here, you probably make a lot of connections. I seem like whenever I go to these things, I have like one goal, and that's to make like one connection. Like I set the bar where it's attainable for me, because it's hard for me to meet new people. So I say, if I can get just one good connection, this thing is worth it. And so, you know, traditionally we'd go to what, like one or two of these a year. So, you know, after a little bit, you know, you're kind of amassed in a pretty decent network. So how many connections would you say you made?
I took it to work today, but I had a business card stack of guys who, not vendors, about yay tall.
All right.
Of like, oh, hey, this guy, you know, this is what he was. This is what he did. This is what this guy does.
All right. Flex on us. I see, bro. I see you. Nicely done.
I'm a social butterfly, as you said.
Yeah. Nick, what's your goal when you go to these things? Are you trying to meet people? Are you trying to see vendors? What are you trying to do? Are you just trying to get drunk?
I'm trying to look for people I know, trying to talk to vendors, not so much socializedly.
Why not? I can't imagine.
It's hard, man. Humans are hard.
No, they're not. Not when you're as charming and good looking as you are, especially when you have the Jesus hair. It's very disarming.
Cut, man. I already lost that edge.
I know. Everybody just is like, man, you seem so familiar. Where do I know you from? Have you ever
got the long hair?
Yeah.
The water thing?
Yeah. You've ever been to Christmas? You ever been to one of those? Maybe you've seen me there. Or to a church. Odds are you've seen me. Yeah, good times. Yeah. So you also said that it was slightly smaller. Did you mean like in attendance, or did you mean
attendance,
like
vendors, and number of sessions?
Oh, so just so smaller all the way three. Around.
Yeah, but I don't know if it was more than 15% for everything on average. So, I mean, it was still a very busy floor, and all the vendors, you know, went all out, all the big names, product announcements. Cambium had their same big Cambium event dinner that they do. Or event, like, hey, this is where we're at and what we're doing. So yeah, I mean, the vendors really seem to be throwing their hearts and minds into it. Like Mimosa had their A6X and C6X announcement. So it was definitely pretty. It was well attended for, you know, where we're at. You know, you still have mask requirements for everywhere. You still have some places not being cool with you traveling, and then your other requirements and such going up. So I think they did a really good job.
What do you mean by places not being cool with you traveling?
You could, like, Europe, a bunch of the vendors from Europe could come over.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought you meant there were like venues in Vegas that were like, if you traveled here, we don't want to see you. I was pretty sure they wouldn't stay in business, right?
No, there was nowhere in Vegas that was closed. They love people.
Yeah.
And we're more than happy to take your money.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure probably for the majority of the town, the whole pandemic thing has been pretty terrifying for them. You know, it's like the longevity of, are we going to survive and all that stuff. Because, I mean, pretty much everybody there somehow, one way or another, supports the casino industry or whatever, right? So, yeah, pretty scary.
I don't know the economics of Vegas, but I would assume it's based on one thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent. Well, did everybody seem pretty giddy to be out in a conference again? And
oh, heck yeah. everybody was like, yeah. And so a lot of guys have been in lockdown for a long time. So, yeah, it was really cool.
All right. Well, this is your first conference since COVID, right?
Yeah, actually, Wispapalooza was my last one. I was going to go to Wisp America in 2020. And I guess they had one this spring before, like, sort of really tiny small, but everyone wants to forget about that.
Gotcha.
And so, yeah, so it was definitely, I thoroughly enjoyed it. Yeah, I've had to travel a little bit for work, but, like, where I'm at, there's not another IT guy who does what I do, so I can't, like, bum around. That's why I'm always on the Brothers Wisps. It's my social space.
So was it pretty therapeutic for you?
Other than I hate Vegas.
Yeah, I would love, I wish, and I understand the appeal of Vegas, right? It's gonna attract all those people, and they're also accustomed to supporting large events and stuff like that. But I would really love to just see a different city every year, like have an excuse to travel to a new. That's what I always enjoyed about the MUM, right? It's like mm-hmm. a different, you know, a different view every time, and then you don't get to hang out with your friends and stuff. So Vegas, I think I like the food there. Is that
food was good, I expensive,
that's all I can really think of.
I'm not that much of a foodie either. It's terrible. Like, food's food for me. So yeah, there's honestly, like, I slept terribly. I had to sleep with earplugs a couple nights because I was looking out over the strip was my room, and it's like, ugh. So yeah, I remembered why I didn't. I was like, I want to go to Wisp America. That's the one I want to go to. I'm like, God. Yeah, I remembered it Tuesday when I got there Sunday evening. I was like, oh, this is why.
Well, didn't they announce the next Wisp America in March is going to be in New Orleans?
New Orleans, yep. March 14th to the 17th or something like that.
There you go. That's a rowdy place. Should be interesting. I went there for one of the MUMs. That was it was a pretty fun experience. That's where I met Tom Smith, I think, for the first time. So that was definitely an experience.
That's a fun guy.
Especially if you get to... I haven't got to kick around with Tom for like 5 years, but... internet version is no comparison to the real life version. So,
huh? Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I do thoroughly enjoy listening to his voice.
Mm-hmm. So I think the thing I remember the most about that trip was we were on Bourbon Street, and somehow we were up on a balcony, and Tom was singing opera to all of the women at the top of his voice that would pass by. And yeah, that's kind of like seared into my mind. It was just such a surreal experience. I don't know.
Seeing a unicorn in the forest, basically. It's like, wow.
So majestic. Yeah. It was pretty amazing. Oh, man. God. So Wispapalooza, what, any major takeaways? Anything that you specifically enjoyed or thought was cool or surprised?
Well, it was cool that... the Brothers Wisp got an award. Mike got an award for our contributions to the industry. I thought that was pretty cool.
Mostly SFP joke related, I assume. I don't know what else Mike contributes to the industry.
That and negative commentary about various companies. Which are
he's not afraid to alienate himself or everybody associated with him. Yeah.
Yeah. Notably, the people not there was Ubiquiti.
Right.
Yes. Not on the vendor list at all. Didn't show anything. No products there. And they aren't Wispa members anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. So, I wonder if they had a falling out with Wispa or something like that. There's usually more to the story, right?
Yeah, there's probably more to the story, but you know, you can only guess from the information that you have. And it could be, you know, Ubiquiti was like, well, you know, Wisp is not giving us all that great of advertising. We're just going to save our money and maybe we'll go later on when pandemic stuff is closed up, because that was kind of the excuse that a lot of people were saying was Ubiquiti's reason for not showing up at any of the conferences. So, and, you know, if they're based out of California, maybe that's something more of a concern or an issue for them. So could be something along those lines. Although their booth in 2019 was mainly staffed by non-Ubiquiti employees. There's like one or two, and then the other four or five people were just the big Ubiquiti like supporters,
fanboys,
and guys who, well, okay, I wasn't going to use that word, but yes.
I mean, let's call it what it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So much like I was at Mimosa's booth for a few minutes.
Yeah,
so,
fair enough.
Yeah. So, yeah. Big takeaway, first 6 gigahertz product hitting the market is going to be the Mimosa 6X for point to multipoint.
Cool. Anything magical about that?
Full MIMO. So their thing is that for the Medusa, the Cambium Medusa, you have like 7 different groupings or something like that, and those different groups of connected clients have to be a certain amount of angle away from each other. My understanding, it's like 50 degrees or something around there. And for you to really get benefits out of their MIMO, whereas Mimosa's is going to be far, far less. And they're going to be able to do up to 160 megahertz wide channels, have 6 gigahertz out of the gate. And they have guys on the beta forums. There's guys running 6 gigahertz right now. With the A5Cs, and then I guess Mimosa's got 4 of the A6Xs out right now that they're testing and such, and so they're hoping to be shipping in first quarter next year.
You said that's point to multipoint?
Yep. Aggregate 6.7, let's see, what aggregate they're advertising is 7 gigabits per second out from the A6X, and then each client can do 1.7.
So A is the access point, C is the client?
Yep.
All right.
They make it really simple, and then B is backhaul.
Oh. Heaven forbid we have nomenclature that makes sense. how many clients are they talking about being able to support on an AP?
I think they said 128.
What?
No, I'm pretty sure they said something ridiculous, like perfect world, it was like 200 clients they can support.
Okay. Well, maybe they said that and I was like, okay, divide by 2 because reality.
Right. I mean, it's only because there's 8 chains, right?
Yeah.
So as long as you get them perfect environment, close cell, these aren't going to go like 5-10 miles. This is like Medusa ranges of probably 2-3 miles.
Yeah.
So if you get like good distribution, these things are going to be pretty amazing.
So high density.
So,
and with 6 gig stuff, or it's very directional in line of sight and all that stuff, right?
It's not too much different than 5 gigahertz. So the A6X is not connectorized. It's a 90 degree antenna with a 24 dB gain from the MIMO stuff. I don't know what it is without the MIMO stuff. And then the C6X is going to use the same connectorized stuff as the C5X. So you can use your RF elements, twist port adapters, or Mimosa's twist on antennas. Mm. And they're supposed to be coming out with a 30 and a 35 dB antenna option here soon as well.
That's
pretty cool.
I saw how like RF Elements won, I think, like 3 years in a row, like best product or something like that.
Yep.
Yeah. Was anything new from them, or just they just keep kicking butt on the same stuff?
They're actually coming out with a really cool for your per access point per for your how much bandwidth you're doing to your customers, and how much do your customers are utilizing, how oversubscribed you are or undersubscribed. So they say, hey, this is how many customers you can add in to this access point. This is how much extra wiggle room you have. Or, hey, you have X number of more customers than you really need. You need to be splitting the sector up into smaller access points for optimal performance. That's what has me really excited, because that's a significant portion of my job. And it's like, oh, geez, I can pay somebody $1 per customer to do this for me. Great.
And then you turn around and charge $2 per customer to your company, and then everything's great. Everybody wins.
Yep, everybody wins. So that was pretty cool. They have some more metrics coming out for various different access points and different configurations and such. So a little bit more clarification and like bandwidth and stuff. So they're supposed to be coming out with a new pre-seam report in the next couple months. Our local friend, Jeremy Austin, was really excited about a bunch of that. And I got to ride in the car with him about that. They also have some other stuff that he wasn't mentioned. He's like, well, it's going to be cool, but I can't talk about it yet. And they couldn't mention it yet, but they're supposed to be coming out with some new stuff. But I mean, honestly, like the guys who are running pre-seam, like round and round and round, like it's a really great piece of product and software that you can run in your network that doesn't make a significant difference. It's going to be interesting, in my opinion, when MikroTik finally gets V7 out and people are able to run FQKotl and Cake and see if that's going to be a significant bump on them. I've talked to Jeremy about it, and he's like, they have these other offerings and other benefits besides the Cake and Kotl. But what were you going to say?
I was just saying, like, you know, in a perfect world, you'd probably want to run that everywhere. Mm-hmm. And even on some like residential routers, they're doing that on the wireless as well. And it's funny, if you go into the MikroTik forums, you can see one of the guys who worked on those projects was trying to work with MikroTik to get them to also implement that on the wireless side. But I mean, with all the other things that Preseam offers, like being able to integrate with your billing system and handle the shaping for all of your customers. And now, especially with what they're doing right now, they've got access to all this data that they've been basically hoarding for analytics. And now they can really start to use that to give people intelligence into their network. Like even just some of the material they've been putting out about multi-point systems and like client capacities, like average modulations, like customer counts, they're able to get a lot of intelligence out of all of their customers on how things are performing. So they're going to have all this information to give you in their dashboard on how to do things better. And it's, you know, always learning, and it's always getting more accurate and correct. And the more data that they hoard, the more they're going to be able to provide as a value add in that user interface.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking as well, right? It's not FQKotl and Cake that's the secret. It's all the things that they wrap around it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so we'll see. It'll be interesting. I'm really excited. I finally have a stable in v7.rc4. I can run it stably on my home with FQKotl. I've been doing so for the last, 3-4 weeks without any resets and such. So that's been super nice and cool. And it's doing what it's supposed to be doing. It's hard to tell that it's doing anything.
Does it feel any different to the way you had things configured prior?
Well, so the way I had things prior is I just was throwing bandwidth at the problem, like 300-400 megabits per second. So I'm limiting myself to 100 now. And probably what I ought to do is just start dropping it down lower and lower till I start noticing stuff.
Right.
But yeah, just running Kotl. Everything seems fine. I spent a boatload of time demoing and testing this in the lab and trying to get stuff. So like the CCR line had for a really long time, basically since Codal and Cake came out, there wasn't really many issues, but anything that like the router board stuff, like you throw Cake and Codal on and it would just straight crash or like go like a minute or two and then crash and then go into this reboot loop. It was really pain in the neck. So I'm glad MikroTik has finally figured out whatever that problem was and gotten things balanced out. The David Tat, I saw his posts on the MikroTik forum. So it's really cool to see him in reaching out, because MikroTik is, you know, it's going to be a significant number of internet service providers across the world. And if you can turn on, you know, do one thing, turn on this and get greater benefit to your customers and a better experience, that's really awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I'm excited about it. Well, I mean, not just service providers, but think about like MSPs that are using these as managed routers, or really anybody mm-hmm. that's got customers where they're going to get complaints about service and you need to elevate VoIP or you need to do whatever. This can, I mean, it's not a silver bullet. It doesn't cure everything, but I think it definitely puts some really strong duct tape on there.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, I've been passing, 3.7 gigabits per second through 2004. To a bunch of different clients, and no noticeable packet loss or increase in latency. You just turn it on, turn it off, turn on bandwidth test, turn off bandwidth test, push it really, really hard until the CPU starts locking up in the 2004. But that's because I'm trying to do way too much on it just to try to lock it up. But yeah, it's pretty impressive. I'm pretty happy with it. Mm. Let's see. Also, the scuttlebutt was Tarana. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that correctly. Nick, did you see their video?
I talked to one of their salespeople a while ago.
Okay.
So it's hard because the original use case of what they were talked to for is something that I'm like, it's not going to happen anyway. And it was high tree density. That's not really what the product is for anyway. So apparently their special sauce is all in their software and their ability in software to filter out noise to be able to work in like really high SNR environments where you're really close or around the noise floor. They have some special sauce in software and probably some, you know, special onboard hardware that they're using to kind of get some really good noise rejection. And so I think their ideal environment for this is like sort of populated areas that have like trees in the way, where it's like, it's not really worth deploying something like buy cells or this really heavy LTE gear when you can get something like this, which even when I talked to them, it was really up in the air on like what channels they support and you know, what's coming down the future and what works now. Like they don't even have demo models to get to people, but the people who have tested it that I've asked questions to, I mean, it does what they say it does. I don't know mm-hmm. how extensive they've tested it or how far they've gotten with it, but apparently the software is actually doing what they're promising.
So what are these things? Yeah. Are they radios? Is this a whole new radio line?
Point to multipoint. Yeah.
Yeah. It's new a multipoint company. System.
Okay. Okay. Is it? Oh, you said they didn't even talk about frequencies or anything like that.
3.5 and 5 gigahertz.
Okay.
Yeah, the big selling one is the 5. You know, because it's not like CBRS territory, but because of the signal to noise and the software, you know, you're able to get it to work at in really noisy environments. So in high density, you're able to use less access points, and apparently it's got a ton of capacity. And so this is a good option other than splitting up into, you know, a ton of like 30 degrees in high density areas or something. But
so
they have a hard time like getting lots of stock and getting it out to people to like test it.
What do you think this is custom silicon, or do you think this is all off the shelf stuff?
Custom.
Pretty sure it's custom.
Yeah, supposedly they've been in development and just been running on investor money since like 2011, 2012.
God, 10 years, that's a long time.
And yeah, so they've been developing this for a really, really long time. Companies with lots of data have said that, yes, the Tyrannus stuff is good. And these companies are neither the Wisps nor the nor Tyranna guys. So everyone I've talked to said, yeah, this stuff is working. This stuff is pretty impressive. This stuff's amazing. The only guys I know who are getting it are guys who have a bucket load of cash that they can dump on it.
Gotcha.
So it's not going to be cheap here. You're going to be looking at a lot of money per access point. I guess I want to say somebody said 3 times the Medusa range. So depending on which Medusa you're talking about, you're looking at 15 to 21 grand for an access point. But you can get put a boatload of people on it. Supposedly they're doing like 400 megabits per second on a 20 megahertz wide channel somehow. They're benefiting a lot from multi-user MIMO, and then also path reflection. They're able to use a lot of that. One guy who I was talking to, he doesn't have any experience with that equipment, but his big concern is that's a lot of processing power you're trying to put up on top of a tower. How is that going to, how are you going to make certain that all that processing power is going to not burn up over multiple years, which is what you're going to need to make your ROI on that.
Yeah. Also makes me wonder if you're doing a lot of kung fu, like you were talking about a lot of magic in the software and maybe some compression and stuff. I wonder how much latency that adds. Maybe it's minuscule compared to the benefits you're going to get, but there's got to be some downside, right? There's always a trade-off.
Yeah.
Cost.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. That's always one of the costs. Yeah, I'm just worried, these guys have only been making demo units for the last decade. So manufacturing-wise...
They're not really selling units, so...
Yeah. Well, and manufacturing-wise, it's hell for even a major company like Cambium or Ubiquiti or Mimosa to get their parts. How are these guys who aren't new, haven't been manufacturing stuff for years and years and years, how is that going to look? And, are we going to be running into our early product line issues like we've run into with all the major companies? I mean, Mimosa with their B5 port issues, or Ubiquiti with every single product line that they've released. Cambium had something. What was the crazy one recently? Well, they had to do a big recall. But yeah, my point's made.
And I don't know their organization, but it's like if you have this really awesome product that everyone's signing NDAs because they don't have product to push, so they don't want to overhype the product because they can't sell it to you. Like, how are they going to keep the doors open if you can't manufacture or sell this awesome hyped product? And they're having to keep people quiet about like what it can do in the real performance because they don't want people to get angry. So it's kind of an interesting situation.
Or maybe they don't really want to sell individual units. Maybe they want to sell the IP. So you go to a show like WISPA, you flaunt it in front of all the vendors, and you get somebody to buy you out.
Maybe that's where they're at. Could be.
I mean, that way you don't have to worry about manufacturing, any of the logistics associated with that. You just figure out how to make the product work, sell it to somebody else.
Yeah, your investors are happy. You get a nice retirement.
Yeah,
check. You
get a pile of cash. You cut and run. Yeah.
Yeah. It could be, until we know more, until we sign the NDA.
You can sign it, and we'll talk. You'll talk to our sales engineers, but like, we can't get you any units. Okay.
Cool. So yeah, that's that is what it is. I guess we'll see. It's definitely something interesting. I think it should be putting a little bit of fire underneath everyone's boat, like, uh-oh, we're going to be seeing something new. See where it goes.
Interesting.
This is what drives me crazy, because we're like right at the cusp of gigabit to the home in multi-point fixed wireless from multiple fronts, not just like Terragraph. Like, we've got solutions like this. We've got new like MoMIMO stuff, which, you know, Mimosa probably has a lot more access because of AirSpan's connections to get, you know, more chips and parts.
Mm-hmm.
But then Ubiquiti's not at the trade show, and they're releasing beta products that say Terragraph compatible, but like there's no like actual Terragraph kit. It's just 60 gigahertz stuff. And, you know, everyone makes fun of me, but like, where's MikroTik's wireless products? It's like, this is like the time that you would want to like step in and dominate the market. It's like, they're even Ubiquiti, they're not showing up to these events. They're dancing around 60 gigahertz product lines. Mimosa's like, hey, we're first to market. We got this thing already. So I'm like, where's all the other good stuff? Cambium's still doing their thing, of course. They're always going to. Yeah. But I'm like waiting for the pressure of all these new technologies so that we start to get a lot of the benefits, and maybe we get more competitive pricing. Like, Terragraph is quite expensive right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've seen in like even some of the YouTube videos, you can kind of see some unlabeled 60 gigahertz products on MikroTik's table. It's like, so what do you have? What does it do? What's the power draw? Because, you know, Terragraph is a hard sell right now, but the concept is amazing.
Yeah. Terragraph still feels, from everybody I've talked to that's been playing with it, it still feels like a beta product. Like, I think all of the units that people are pushing out from manufacturers, they're still really rapidly finding and repairing software bugs, and I think sometimes even hardware stuff. So it doesn't feel fully baked. I mean, it feels like, I mean, you can smell it in the oven. It's just not quite ready yet, but it's close. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, just watch any of Chad Walk's commentary and blog posts.
I've been following that pretty close.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, he is giving such fine grained detail on all the testing he's doing in our Terragraph channel. It's pretty awesome. Yeah, I just grab my popcorn and go in there, and between him and Arnie, like back and forth their experiences with stuff, and then Chad's starting to try a lot of different vendors. Yes, it's getting really good in there.
Yeah, I was wandering around and I was chatting with the AdTrend guys, and they're like, "Oh, hey, we have the 60 gigahertz stuff." I'm like, "Oh, it's not Terragraph," and they're like, "Rah rah rah, bash on Terragraph for like 2 minutes." I'm like, all right, if you want to bash on Terragraph, go for it, buddy. All right, well, if you seriously want to get into this market, you get Chad Walks to do an unboxing of your stuff and give it the golden thumbs up, because then people will be interested. But
you know, I always find it distasteful when somebody has to knock down somebody else's equipment, right? Instead of trying to knock somebody else, elevate yourself. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just talk about all the awesome things that yours does that doesn't exist in the other one, right? Don't talk about how the other one's crap and all that stuff. To me, that's just poor form.
Yeah. I was like, well, if you want to get customers, you got to get one of the big who's tested everything and get them to, you know, give them your equipment and get them to beta test it and show it out and, you know, do a YouTube video or whatever. And, you know, how much does that cost a company?
Oh, nothing, because it's coming out of their marketing, their marketing account or whatever. So they've got budget for that.
There you go. You know, as long as the guy doesn't rag on your stuff for years and years and years down the line, and which just basically requires that you do a little bit of tech support. And if you guys really do fall flat on your face, you're like, you know, we appreciate that. We'd appreciate you, you know, holding off till we can actually show you how awesome our stuff is. Yeah. Who's not going to do that? Well, okay, there's probably plenty of people.
I don't have time for that. Chad apparently has all the time in the world, so he's the guy to go to for that mess.
Yeah. So we'll be. I'm hoping. I got him Chad's contact info, and I'm hoping Chad can do that, and we can all sit around and laugh at the AdTrend stuff. But we'll see.
Well, AdTrend's got a different level of money that some of these other vendors don't, so maybe they can make it work.
Maybe. Do they really have a different level of money than Cambium?
I would think so.
Maybe. Right? Maybe. But, yeah, probably.
But they're fiber, right?
Yeah.
They have a lot of, like, so it's like Terragraph is kind of a competing product to their mainstream product lines. So it makes sense for them to bash it.
Well, I don't know.
No, well, yeah, but they have, yeah, but they have their own 60 gigahertz wireless stuff. That's what I was talking about.
Oh.
And that's for, is that for specifically like point to multipoint, like
yeah.
to be in that space?
Yeah, they can do like okay. 32 clients or something like that. I as soon as he started bashing, I started checking out. So
yeah, and also my thinking is like, do you like the petroleum guys, right? Oil's going away. So rather than scream about all the other, you know, the wind power and all that stuff, just start owning all of that too, you know? Just start investing all of your money in all the battery technology. Just become the guys that own all of that, and you'll be fine.
Yeah. So yeah, that was interesting. Everybody else and their mother's uncle has something Terragraph, though. So, ooh, that was fun.
Well, that's the buzzword for the day, right?
The frustrating thing for me is like none of it's intercompatible. Like you go to them, and you're like,
even though
hey,
it says
so when can
Terragraph certified, it's not.
Yeah,
it's proprietary. Which bothers me too. I mean, I get some people don't like the whole mystery of the IPv6 overlay and like the whole Facebook model that was there originally. But I mean, some interop would be nice in the industry. But it's like, no, this is our timing mechanisms. Everything about this only works with our kit. Otherwise, it breaks real bad. But also, it breaks real bad right now. But we're gonna fix it.
Well, maybe that's how you differentiate yourself, right? Like I've got the secret sauce; these other guys don't. And you can only get it by going to my product because we have these magical tweaks that make it incompatible, right? It's like, otherwise, you know, if it's, you know, the, I don't know, the same chalk you're trying to sell that the other guy is, it's like, how do you differentiate? Is it right on a blackboard? Yeah. Is it white? Yeah. Great. Good. Done.
But they should compete and try to get power drawdown and try to get, you know, just better software out the door. Because once you roll this out, I mean, you can't just swap. It's expensive. Like if you, depending on how you deploy your fiber and how you're getting power to these things, like some areas based on the power draw, it's not that realistic to get batteries and solar depending on the topology and like the grid in the area. So it's like a real hard toss up between actually contracting out fiber or putting in Terragraph and the bugs with their product line where I lose all of my clients after 10 seconds of losing GPS like that. You can't deploy that. So pretty rough.
Yeah. So I don't know. I mean, to me, it seems like you can, I mean, there's even gasoline, the most boring. This is the, you know, regulated. I'll get out. There's competition there, you know, mainly largely based off of location, but and you can still compete off of, you know, the quality of your products. How nice of a capacitor, like in my example, what I was thinking about 2 minutes ago is, fun fact, the x86 platform, everybody runs basically the same thing. Everyone can run Microsoft Windows on x86 effectively, but there's a whole world of, you know, two different makers of x86 chips, and HP, Dell, Microsoft, you know, all these different manufacturers that are building stuff. Like, why hasn't anybody been like, oh wow, the computer industry did really, really well, and like everybody made a boatload of money, including the guys who made this stuff, so why don't we just do what they did? Rinse and repeat, technology companies. It's not that hard. I don't know.
I don't know. I don't have the answer. But while we're talking about...
Can I just have cheap gigabit wireless, please?
Oh, is that it? Oh, well, why didn't you say something sooner?
Just cheap and like gigabit to everyone.
Well, you didn't say reliable. Add that.
Oh, well, no.
You only get two? Is it that right? Thing?
Fast and cheap. I love it.
Oh, man. All right. Well, while we're talking about hardware, I had two hardware things that I was interested. One is I forgot that Nick just got like his quad pack of 5009. So I was curious what your first impressions are.
The bracket's kind of weird. It took me a minute to orient the parts correctly in a way that wasn't weird. It's like, as long as you get all the parts lined up for the bracket, it's actually pretty solid. I thought there was going to be a little bit more bow or flex to it, the way that the parts are. But I haven't powered them up yet. I need to get a bunch of DACs. But I'm really excited to have one U of four 10 gigabit routers. So I have like two 1036s and two CRS317s. So I'm going to have like a V6 lab and a V7 lab for testing and being able to iPerf through it instead of, you know, virtualizing it. So I'm really excited to see how this is going to perform. The switches have been pretty rock solid on the newest release candidate. For whatever reason, they stopped their momentum. Haven't heard anything from MikroTik in a while now. Mm-hmm. So hopefully that's soon to be big release next. But a lot of people I've talked to on the newest release candidate for the routers, things have been for the most part solid. I mean, things aren't obviously polished very well. But I want to try
5009 is the version 7, right?
Version 7 only. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So what's going to be the first thing you're going to test?
Probably V6 and like V6 next hop for V4 addressing and making sure that MPLS works and seeing what the performance looks like, because that's going to be like a really awesome clean network topology to be able to deploy. But it's going to be a huge pain to forklift a V6 network to V7. I'm probably gonna have to parallel the network and migrate customers, because I have no clue how the interop is gonna work.
Well,
right now it doesn't.
Right.
So I have BGP going in between V6 and V7. I screwed it up a couple weeks ago, and so I haven't been messing around. I haven't messed with it, so it's not working right now. But I had it working, passing routes back and forth, and filtering it. And you know, that portion is fine, but like the route filters don't translate over at all doing a V7 upgrade. And I would be blown away if MikroTik comes up with some sort of route filter upgrade kit. And maybe that's what's holding them up. And plus, like everyone's complaints about how the route filters were done, which they're not clean, and I would recommend against learning them right now, because there was so many complaints that probably there's going to be some changes to how they are. But I didn't mind them. I, coming from a slight programmer background, I appreciated what they were doing and how they did it. And the like lack of help and just like, here you go. It's data. So, a lot of those complaints I felt like were like, well, all right, cool. But Andrew Thirst has had some good points, like tab complete would be really nice. It'll be interesting to see where that boils up to. IP Architects also had some comments that was like, all right, you know, I can see where they're coming from. But otherwise,
it makes sense for programmers for sure.
Yeah.
I personally like it a lot, and you know, it'd be nice if they went more towards standards based configuration to be able to do a lot of more automation friendly things. But I could totally see from you know, a junior or mid level, like only network engineer, I've never done software, seeing something like that, and it's like, what in the world is this? What happened to my clean firewall rule style?
My little GUI that I can just click the button of yes, filter this. I was like, yeah, that's gone. But I guess I've gotten so used to this command line that I was like, whatever, such is life. It's MikroTik. I don't pay enough for this to be able to complain. Beyond that, besides that though, everything's been working fine, and I'm debating. I need to get V7 on another 1009 and connect it into my network and see if there's going to be any issues. But kind of just debating on pull the config on each of my edge routers and then just rip them up to V7 and move the rest of the network. You ain't living if you ain't running beta code in production.
I will then vicariously live through you, bud.
Like at scale, like once you get to like real traffic engineering problems, you're like, okay, so can't use VPLS because ECMP is broken in MPLS, and if I want to use BGP, I also don't have ECMP, so I have to be very manual with all my route filters. It's like I would love to deploy V6 across the network, but there's no ECMP in V6. That sucks. So it's like I'm gonna have to just across the topology of like 50 plus tower sites, just individually manually traffic steer the whole network, or do I just hope and pray V6 comes out and it gives me all these amazing tools that is like so simple to maintain? I'm just like at the edge of my seat. Please get to the stable point, release bigger capacity devices. Because you know, if they're able to like deliver this and you can run, you know, these small router boards that have Docker images and like low power availability environments, and having zero tier for like out of band and cellular, and having these huge ASIC chips, and once they go into like bigger 40 gig, 100 gigabit things, it's probably going to rock the market. Because when you go to 100 gigabit or 40 gigabit, I mean, that's going to be really difficult on a CHR appliance. Like they had a whole issue with like drivers and stuff and packets getting out of order and things just being unstable at that like high end. Even if you get a Vengeance, it's like, okay, so if I put a 40 gigabit card in here, like can it actually do 40 gigabit? It's like, well, no, it's probably going to be more around 20 gigabit. So once you're at that point, you got to go high end like gray market Juniper or probably some Cisco if you want to hurt yourself at that end of Cisco products. So, but there isn't really that much else in that high-end capacity space, really. I mean, most people either go Cisco or Juniper. So, I'm you know, they've got a lot of potential here on shaking the market and hopefully bringing more competitive prices with these other vendors, like maybe bring some Juniper pricing down, some Cisco pricing down, make it, you know, better for everybody. But they just, they're not saying anything now. They're on release candidate 4. Or whatever. What are they on now?
Yeah, but is this really any different than MikroTik 2 years ago, 5 years ago?
Well, yeah, because they have many, they have quite a few multiples in staff.
Mm-hmm.
They've changed the way that they're going about everything. They're using better tools for organization. They're picking up speed. They're ramping things up. Like, they covered a lot of ground, but now it's like, I know you have products.
I want them.
Are done, unlisted on your YouTube channel. Like, are you stuck on chip shortages? How do we get you chips?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, that's a good point. While there are chip shortages and they can't manufacture, that doesn't mean they can't still R&D. Right? They can get enough for that. So, yeah, it makes me wonder. Could there be chip shortages long enough for them to hop a generation of hardware? They're like, oh, well, you know, we've already figured out how to do this thing that's way better than this thing we had just developed. Let's go ahead and do this. And then all we got to do is delay another couple months. And Nick's not going to be that mad at us if we make another couple.
From what I've heard from certain sources, they've already got POC models of like in the lab. They just can't mass produce them and get them to customers. Oh,
I've heard that they come up with a lot of POC devices, some that never actually see the light of day. You know what I mean? This product wise. So.
Heard some wacky stuff.
I've just heard that they've done that. I've never heard about the actual devices themselves that they create.
Yeah.
I see a knowing look over there. All right. You keep your secrets.
It's relevant to internet service providers. It's just weird things that MikroTik's doing because they control so much over in their region as far as the service provider and weird things that they ask for. But I mean, I need better network software at that power draw that MikroTik provides, because if you've got solar only sites, you can't put like Cisco or Juniper in there. It's just not, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
So until then, you just deal with what you got.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for the longest time, at least in my mind, I say the longest time, when they really started spitting out router boards for the first time, there was always this struggle of, you know, can we get more power out of this hardware? Because that's, I mean, at first for me, that was a limiting factor, is they just couldn't push enough packets. And then they started having, you know, just more capable hardware. Well, and now the bottleneck is the software. And it seemed like the software kind of caught back up, but then the hardware sort of like outpaced what the software was capable of again. You know what I mean? So I feel like that's where we're at right now. That's like, I feel like the hardware is way more capable than the software is. And we just were, I mean, we're on the cusp. They've got a whole lot of dominoes lined up and we're just waiting for them to really kind of push that first one over. That's in my opinion of the software piece. And then, once the software's up and kicking ass and FQ Quotal's rocking and version 7's fully stable and, you know, then we'll be ready, in my opinion, like the small scale that I work on, for them to have the hardware start pushing back up and big. Do you foresee a near future where you need 100 gig on your network infrastructure?
It depends on the price point, because if it's cheap enough, like, you shouldn't go crazy. But if you could design, you know, a 40 gigabit or 100 gigabit edge today, that doesn't like kill your wallet. Like, if they have a really competitive, awesome product that is very high capacity, like, you could just build that and then work on the rest of your infrastructure. You don't have to worry about recabling and forklifting that while you have traffic. So like, just getting it out of the way, getting a really robust, scalable design, or even from a consulting standpoint, it's like, you have a potential to explode and grow. So like, for the cost it would have been for like maybe one Juniper device or even less, like, you can get a whole redundant stack of equipment that you don't have to worry about and stock spares in those crazy capacities. And we're going to have, you know, more layer 3 switches to be able to offload a lot of routing into the ASIC. And then, you know, you'll be able to do more specialized routing focused things on the routers. And so like, you'll have this whole edge that's going to run for years and years and years. That's scale with you. And I think it would be pretty awesome, especially from the redundancy factor and just the capacities you get. Because even when you get to like 10 gigabit interfaces and you have to, you know, bond some ports, well, once you kind of get towards the edge of one of those ports, you can start to get some weird traffic things. But once you just go overboard on port capacity, like, that's just not an issue.
Yeah. Future proof.
Right.
Yeah. Not only are you future proofing, but like, half of your metrics and your designs for your business case, and like, okay, how are we going to build this and make certain it's going to work, is done. Like, if you can just throw bandwidth at the problem, mm-hmm. Hey, I have a 40 gig port. That's going to be more than enough for 1,000 customers. You know, give them a gig each. Go for it. We'll be great.
Yeah. I like the idea of overbuilding on the edge too, right? So if you've got a 40 or 100 gig port and it's a router, conceivably, it's going to be able to route that much traffic, which means as they release new software features, right, that are a little bit more CPU intensive, you're probably going to be able to take advantage of those. So, you know, have something beefier than you think you need because you don't know what's around the corner next week. So it makes sense to me.
It's a lot harder to, if you're not like diverse, like, being able to just upgrade an edge is not easy. You know, there's been a lot of situations, depending on circumstances and the way schedules line up and remote hands, where the migration fails and you have to cut back. And that's just what it is. So like, that's a really stressful time, especially if the people on site aren't super knowledgeable. That's a very, very stressful time trying to cut over to a new stack and have it just not work for some unforeseen reason. But, you know, hitting the outage window, you got to move everything back. Mm. That's pretty discouraging. So just eliminating that stress as well is huge. But I mean, even if you look at the 48 port switch line with the 40 gigabit interfaces, like most of the other vendors, they're 2 to 3 times that price.
Oh,
so it's just, it's really exciting when you think about, especially the PoE switch alone and the 48 port range. But so I'm really curious where these prices are, because, you know, you're going to get potentially really high performance, like 40 gigabit plus, potentially around like 1072 prices that people are already paying. You know, being able to get potentially vengeance grade performance on these really high end newer ARM CPUs for a fraction of the power that you can also DC power is massive. Because I've looked for options of DC powering these server appliances, and it's either extremely expensive or it's extremely proprietary. So I want to know what the future holds, because it would make life so much simpler.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm just, like you said, I'm looking forward to hardware that will last me a good while. Because the last thing I want to do is build some infrastructure and then have, you know, planned obsolescence in it. I want to know that it's just going to work and I'm not going to have to think about it for a good while. Well, probably primarily because I'm lazy. I don't want to have to deal with it. I don't want to have to think about it. Yeah. I've got enough stress and pressure in my life. I don't need to introduce any additional points. Well, while we're talking about hardware, somebody posted in a picture of Netfiber 9, which is this is new, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. I was
not even on the website yet.
Yeah.
Our friend Rifty.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know who you're talking about because it came from a random anonymous source. But it's a picture of, it looks like an outdoor enclosure. This is kind of kin to the Netbox, right? Kind of like form factor wise, it kind of looks like that, doesn't it?
Yeah, kind of form factor, but supposedly from the picture it says, or from MikroTik, it's the spiritual successor of the Fiberbox. So it was a 5-port, 1 gig SFP, and then like had one Ethernet PoE import and maybe a DC power jack. I don't recall, but I never found a use for one.
Gotcha. Well, this one, they call it the Fiber 9 because it's got four, or rather it's got five SFP ports, right? So you've got regular SFPs for your standard gigabit internet, or gigabit network, I should say. And then you've also got four SFP plus ports. So you got four 10 gig ports on this thing. It's got an ARM7, 256 megs of RAM, right? So it's not a lot of RAM. But this is, this is a switch, right? So it's also got a Marvell switch chip in there that can handle even the heaviest loads. I love their marketing now. It's fun. But as Tommy said, this one does also have PoEn, and for better or for worse, it's got a DC barrel jack on this one. So the 5009, they definitely took community feedback and they added terminals to it. Whenever I see something like this, I always think, man, instead of that DC jack, why can't it be terminals? But it looks like a decent product. There was no... Do you guys see a price point on this thing? Usually they say something.
I didn't see one.
No, there's nothing here. And I looked on the site. It didn't show up.
All right.
But I mean, it can't be $150, $200 maybe at most, in my opinion.
It's pretty nice. So you got four 10 gig ports. I'm assuming they'll also take 1 gig optics. And then five mm-hmm. dedicated SFP plus or SFP ports. So that's a decent, that could be a decent distribution point for, not just outdoor, but if it's designed for outdoor, it should be able to handle higher temperatures than normal mm-hmm. indoor stuff. So I could see screwing this inside of a maintenance room or something like that for in-building distribution or, really anything.
Manufacturing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I see this being a good solid option.
Yeah, that could be. I see that. Yeah, I was like, I'm trying to think of some way to fit one of those into a handhole or a pedestal for active Ethernet to the home. I'm like, can't run DC that far, can you? So, but yeah, no, it's definitely kind of cool, and it's really interesting that they're doing these weird form factors and stuff. So I wonder who it through and what they're like, hey, this is our market for this. They're going to love it.
I guess you could stick that at the top of a tower, huh?
I hate that concept. I hate when quick kit up in the air. Like, I don't know. That's just me personally. Like the whole net power, putting it up out of reach where you have to climb if something goes wrong. Just that product to me is just terrifying.
You got to believe.
See, I'm of the opinion of, yeah, sure, it may suck that I'll have to climb, but the amount of time I'm going to have to spend running all these different runs of cable up and the amount of pain and sorrow I have doing that and running the extra conduit up 100 feet. I've had to pull a quarter-inch wall steel conduit that were 15-foot sticks up 140 feet. My boss, as we built that up one of our towers. I'm never doing that again. I'm putting switches up at the top of the tower. And so I can see this. The trouble with it is that well, if I'm already running fiber up, why don't I just run a 24 pair? You know, maybe, yeah, sure, it's more expensive and stuff. So, yeah, I can understand that. But backhaul radios usually are what you're, I guess, I don't know, maybe it's access. You can see access, sort of, kind of, I don't know. But at that point, why don't you just use something else? I guess you get the 10 gig ports. 10 gig ports makes a lot of sense. I don't know.
Yeah, I think a lot of things that are, you want to like build it and like not have to do a lot of maintenance on it for a period of time and then go move on to new projects. If you're going to pull fiber, you probably want to like pull it into a rack and like have it secured and spliced into a tray and safe and protected.
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of environments where that might be useful, especially in like, I don't know, buildings. Like the net power type stuff kind of makes sense because, yeah, it's PoE. So you run fiber and power up, whatever. But this is literally just all fiber
in
a little box. So it's a little odd.
Yeah, that's what's confusing me too. So somebody obviously made a justification. And supposedly there's a YouTube video there for it, and the picture shows it up on a tower. So and they're also advertising their little like feed their loop tray. I'm curious what that is. A little additional features on the bottom of the case to help keep everything neat and tidy. Well, let me see what this is.
Yeah, from the faded out picture, it doesn't look like you're going to be putting a lot of slack loops in that. So,
no. Yeah. You know, you can. So, I know this isn't an announced product yet, MikroTik, but I want details here.
Out very soon.
Yeah, that's going to be cool.
I get a new higher core count ARM router announced instead.
Oh, that would be beautiful.
Something like that 16 core one. What is that?
Yeah, 2016. That would be so beautiful. I'm so sad that Tile died.
I mean, ARM's the future, man.
Whatever.
Embrace your ARM overlords. I get it.
This is so much power core, and there's like lots of innovation in there because it's Amazon's.
Mm-hmm.
Right now it's in a weird spot because, you know, the 2004, the full 10 gig one, it's pretty close in price to the 1036 type product. So for some stuff where I'm like, I know I don't need that performance and it'd be nice to save like $300, but I can't trust it yet. Even though it's like such a nice device, especially with MLAG and like 317s. Being able to build like a nice clean gigabit stack right there. But I gotta buy the 2S Plus still, 1036. Just wait.
You'll be fine. Yeah. You've got all the time in the world. You could do those late night cutovers, they'll go great.
I won't be doing them.
That's somebody else's problem.
That's what I always say. I'll be dead by then. It's not my problem. And for the last place, I was correct. I was dead before I had to do any of that stuff. So I got out. Call me Andy Dufresne. I escaped Shawshank. Let's see. I'm looking at the list. We're doing pretty good so far. Do you guys have any amazing revelations you need to get off your chest?
No revelations, but I am pretty excited about Big Network. I don't know if you guys have seen that on like the Facebook's stuff. They're making like a hardware appliance for like SD-WAN with zero tier. And I think somebody was supposed to go to the show and have a couple models. But they built some like, I think a little bit of custom silicon, and they're doing a lot of hardware offloading and some optimization of some of the zero tier mechanisms, I believe. And they might support some other VPN protocols, but it's literally like a fully hardware offloaded VPN appliance. That would be really awesome for different SD-WAN type things or bridging data center, cloud, enterprise offices. There's no prices yet, but I was curious if anybody has seen anything from them yet.
Are they like talking wireline speed hardware offloading, or?
I believe so. At line rate, like they got a whole bunch of stuff offloaded into like RAM and a combination of ASIC stuff for encryption, and apparently they're getting like line rates over like zero tier and stuff like that, depending on your network.
Wow. Yeah, I know that's going to be entirely dependent upon the connection in between you and there, but the connection between you and there is line rate by all definitions. So that's cool.
Yeah, it sounds like you'll be able to just kind of plop this in and onboard it maybe through their custom portal. I don't know if they've written things from zero tier to provide you that that control module, but it's kind of like a new player with some really cool tech. Like I'm a huge fan of zero tier. I'm really excited to start deploying some zero tier stuff, but you know, they got this hardware appliance you just pop in and you can merge all your branches together at line rate. So
Talk about fanboy.
I mean, I like zero tier, but I don't know. I'm curious if anyone's seen it or if somebody had some at the show, because I thought they said they were going to bring a couple hardware models.
I didn't see anything about zero tier stuff, but and there were definitely a couple of the vendors that I didn't get around to. Microsoft was there. It was interesting. They actually had people from the Metaswitch guys there. Lots of TV companies, lots of phone companies.
Interesting.
So it is interesting. I don't recall.
I wonder how worried the TV people are as to like the cords continue to get cut and people increasingly aren't interested in that stuff. I wonder how well they're doing.
If they don't have wet pants right now, they are fools.
In the complexity of deployment, depending on the operator and just the cost, like some of the ones that I looked at in the past, because where I'm at, there's a few cable operators that have like full-blown cable head ends and satellites, and they pipe the channels just raw QAM like over cable, and then they put it into these really cheap like IPTV converters to get it to like multicast. But then they're not even using multicast, they're just blasting it layer two wherever the VLAN is, which is hilarious and a different issue on its own. But it's expensive. Like most of these providers, you got to get like a rack of servers and storage, and it's all on-prem and it tunnels out to their stuff. There's a lot of complexity to roll this thing out, but now it's like add on to Hulu, add on to YouTube, you get TV, people are bundling and packaging more services together. So I just hope it doesn't turn out like the cable industry did, and now you got to like pay for all the bundles, and now you're back to that huge monthly subscription.
It's going to go back to that big, huge monthly subscription. We're going to have the golden age of streaming is on its way down. I think it's pretty clear that that's already happening. I mean, Netflix has gone up every year for the last like 2-3 years, I recall. Just in general.
Yeah.
The one nice thing about the streaming is they've kept their promise, no advertisements.
That is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you pay for it.
Yeah, if you pay for it. Well, like Amazon will occasionally do their like ad for one of their other TV shows. So I'm like, all right, I'll tolerate this for now, since I'm already paying for a Prime subscription. But yeah,
Hulu in 8 minutes.
Okay. My buddy pays for the Hulu advertising free. I know I'm a terrible person, and I break my own rules on there, but I had to finish off The Last Mans.
They're going to say, hey, you're using a VPN service, or hey, you're sharing it. He's going to have to deactivate it.
I'm good enough with networking, though, that they aren't going to catch me. But that's the thing for Hulu. We were doing some IP changes and upgrades a couple months ago. Keep that in mind. Don't change like IPs back and forth for a set of customers too many times. Otherwise, Hulu will count that and say that, hey, you have too many people on your account. and that your customers then have to call up Hulu and say, yes, my ISP was changing things. I am not sharing my account.
Awesome.
Yeah. So FYI, word to the wise, it's 3 IP changes in 3 weeks or something like that.
Have fun.
So, yep. Keep that in mind. Besides that, Nick, do you run any LTE gear?
Fortunately, yeah.
I was surprised at the number of guys running LTE gear.
Especially AirSpan.
Yeah, it's AirSpans everywhere.
Every time I hear a Wisp say they have AirSpan, I'm like, you have AirSpan equipment? Like, it's expensive, and like there's a high operational load and the software licensing, and I don't think they have any of the processing on radio. It's all through their server, so you got to set up transport, and it's like, are you putting servers at every head end, or are you spanning layer 2 with VPLS or other transport mechanisms back to the head end? Like, how are you dealing with these systems?
Most of the guys were doing VPLS. But yeah, I don't know. The Microsoft guys were like talking about LTE being like the future, and like having, I can't remember what the word was they used, but basically everybody can connect to your LTE stuff, and you just get the money off of how much bandwidth they use, sort of deal. Basically vendor agnostic, everybody can connect. You have connectivity anywhere where you go, and you just expect to have connectivity. And they were like, that's really what, you as a Wisp out in the should be building towards this. And I'm like, yeah, that sounds like a wonderful fantasy world. I don't want Johnny's smartwatch to be eating up all my airtime. Apparently LTE has some level of airtime fairness, but it's like, I kicked the only other company who does LTE around me's butt left and right with Ubiquiti AirMax AC equipment. So I don't feel like there's, obviously I have a bad experience. So all the people in the world can't be crazy.
I hate all of the buy sells that deployed on the network. Fashion. It is so terrible. I mean, it's not even like manufactured in the US. Like, most of the units that you get, like, all the NTP servers are set to China. Like, the whole cloud core system is just terrible. I hate roaming in certain areas. Like, the roaming is such a problem because it's not like intelligent roaming. So like, customers will pile up on one access point when there's 2 other cells nearby. So then you try to cell lock them to the correct access point, and then sometimes that just doesn't work or fails on the CPE. It's just terrible. So,
or the access point dies, and now all your CPEs are cell locked to a dead access point. I did that with Ubiquiti once. Never made that mistake twice. Terrible. Yeah, there's definitely lots of little issues, but the LTE fanboys, they're out there.
Yeah, I mean, when I first met one of the people from AirSpan, they said that it was going to take over everything. You're going to have WAPs in the building, in the premise. That's all LTE. Everything's going to have SIM cards, and it's going to be awesome. And they were saying how
long ago was that?
It was a couple of years ago. Like, it was around when they first were going to have like a distribution partnership with Baltic, and they went to one of the trade shows, and they literally just slammed on WISPs. I'm like, that's the bread and butter of this conference and distributor that you're visiting right now. And what? And they probably said the term tier one carrier and their relationship with Sprint 1,000 times. It's like, wrong target audience here.
How'd that work out for you?
I mean,
your wonderful relationship with Sprint.
Asking
AirSpan.
Even with Sprint, the only stuff that they deployed for Sprint was in-city LTE stuff. They weren't on the towers. Like, it's still like Ericsson, like Nokia, all the big boys. They just had that one segment of in-city like LTE connected smart city stuff, but now we've got like Terragraph and all this other stuff coming out to get bandwidth on these little cells. So it's just odd for them to be in the WISP space now. And then buying Mimosa with that mentality, it was kind of concerning initially. So hopefully that has no bearing or impact on Mimosa's future.
I guess now that Sprint's not pouring money into Airspan and Airspan's having to peddle their stuff to anybody who will buy it, the company keeping...
Right
huh?
So are we Mike right now?
Yeah, we are filling in for him.
Channeling your air mics.
So I guess Airspan is being kept alive by Mimosa right now, because some of those things have just not worked out, and Airspan's such an old company and is slow moving. That's not coming from the Mimosa group guys, unfortunately. They won't tell me anything, but my other contacts have. That's been what I've been hearing, is like just LTE has not been Airspan's bread and butter, beautiful little baby child that it was supposed to be.
Hmm. Doesn't surprise me. I don't use much Mimosa, but it was exciting to see like in newer firmware on some of the links we have, like REST API support and like the option to have open communication of some standard with the equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, ooh, I wonder what this is going to be. And then I talked to somebody at Mimosa, and they're like, Airspan is trying to get the equipment integrated with their NMS system that they have for the Airspan stuff. And I'm like, please don't lock out API programmability availability just to lock us into that NMS software. It's disappointing.
Yeah. I just like some of the other features, but yeah, API stuff would be wonderful. And that was kind of this, you know, Mimosa a while back had like this whole big API push that they were trying to do, but in REST API. Yeah, but they had to pull it out because there was just too many issues, and I don't think they had the resources to develop it. So we'll see.
Because I think they wanted you to be able to tunnel everything to Mimosa Cloud and then be mm-hmm. able to use Mimosa Cloud as the API gateway to communicate with all of your equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Where I'm like, let me inside of my own network manage all this equipment. So, you know, luckily these vendors, they don't have lots of memory. They don't have a lot of flash storage. So some of the practices they do with these web servers are pretty poor. So it's easy to, you know, cache cookies and pull data from these things. And I'm just hoping they never, you know, patch that and just break compatibility with a lot of automation availability that's there today.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, hopefully they don't get good on security. No. So
I'll secure the device. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, don't, but can you trust BBC all the rest of the Yahoos out there?
Well,
I'll run their business down.
As I told somebody at Wispapalooza, after a week and a half of going through Mimosa's forums, what was I wanting? I was doing reading through V7 stuff to get kind of caught up. I am completely convinced that Mimosa has made the prudent choice of not giving its users root access to their equipment.
So no SSH.
Well, or no, sorry, not Mimosa. MikroTik has given the prudent choice of not giving us root access to the equipment. You know, you have the MikroTik GUI.
Oh, like you're talking like Linux subsystem access.
Yeah, the Linux subsystem. Sorry, my bad. My Probably brain. I'm a little tired.
That's how you get like rootkit exploits on kit that you don't know it's there. Let's not open that up.
I hope not. But every now and then you get this guy who's like, I just want root. I'm like, no, you don't.
Trust me, you don't. Not on that gear. Not on your core infrastructure, you don't.
Get yourself a computer, set up Debian, and get root. Not here. So, What about you, Greg? Anything new that you've seen that's been particularly of note?
Man, I've been having my head down in Red Hat land for the last two weeks. I had a bunch of customer demos and stuff to do, and then it was kind of quiet, but I'm prepping for a hackathon coming up. We do that occasionally with a customer. What we'll do is we'll go and we'll go into their environment and we'll say, well, I mean, beforehand, I need to know what's going on. You can't just show up and then expect me to know what I'm doing here. We'll say, what are a couple of things you guys want to accomplish, like in your real network or, in your environment, whatever happens to be. And we'll generally either create a lab environment or they will have a lab environment, do not do this in production. And we will go and we'll help them figure out how to automate all this stuff. So, and at the end of it, they'll have actual working things that they can use. So we've got one of those coming up, some kind of prepping for that. They're using some Nexus kit, some Nexus 9Ks. And I think they want to be able to automate against a bunch of those. So I found that you can get the Cisco virtualized Nexus 9Ks. And I got them deploying in our lab environment. And I wrote some automation so I could say, how many students I want. It'll go and it'll churn them out, pre-configure them, get them ready to go, which isn't the most difficult thing in the world. I say that. Sometimes when you're like vendors, products that you're having to run in a virtualized environment are kind of weird to get those things set up. So it was one of those. Especially it's like weird. So some vendors will create products that whenever you boot the VM, you don't get any, whenever you connect to the console, like the virtual console, and you see the screen, you can't actually interact with the product, right? It's just like there's some text like I loaded. So you have to create a network SSH or Telnet port on the VM host, and then you can, from your workstation connect in, and it'll like basically pop you into a virtual serial port to do your initial configuration. So it's kind of this weird roundabout way you got to do these things. And it's not always well documented all the steps you need to take. But needless to say, what I do is I create a template and then I just deploy the template, connect into it, pre-configure it, move on to the next. Just keep doing that one after another. So I got that piece of it done. So yay. And then I was negotiating some data center contract stuff, which that's old hat. Done that for a long time. And it's so funny because it's never just something simple. It's like, all right, I gotta layer this on. I gotta swoop over here. If I do this, then I can do that. It's like, you're kind of working the system as best you can. It's like, all right, well, their internet, they're charging us this much. So what we can do is say that we want a big upgrade. When they do that, they'll, it's like, well, we're getting big upgrade offers from everybody else. Well, then they'll cut the price here. Then we'll do this. We'll get a cross connect. We'll go to this vendor. And then, so it's just, you got to play the game. You know how it goes. So it's just playing the game. And then once you get the game plan put together, you hand it off to the people that signed the paperwork. Here you go. I can wipe my hands of it until they sign the paperwork. And then we do some extra stuff and then various things like that. I have some other stuff that I don't want to say out loud because then it makes it too real. But a couple of big projects that could turn into multiplying projects. I see a knowing look on Nick's face that may be coming to fruition soon. So I don't know. Things are moving. Things are happening. We'll see. And cool. It all ends well.
That hackathon sounds really cool. Being like prepping for that and being like, oh, here's what we're going to be trying to do. And then like deploying it and then like stuff breaks. And it's like, you now have this many hours to make it work.
Well, it'll be interesting. The idea is you give everybody an individual, controller and set of equipment to work on, but it's the same for everybody, but then they can learn kind of on the fly. Well, it's just everything got stacked up. So I'm doing the hackathon. So I fly out on a Monday, do the hackathon Tuesday and Wednesday. And then Wednesday evening, this is in Oklahoma. And Wednesday evening, I'm going to catch a plane and I fly to Dallas. And I get there kind of late on Wednesday in Dallas. And then Thursday, I'm leading a Summit Connect lab event there. on Thursday, and then Thursday evening after we're done there, I get to fly back to College Station. Chrissy's having a procedure on Friday, so I get to be there for her. And then Saturday, I've got a 5-hour workshop I'm leading for Texas A&M. And then Tuesday, I fly to Chicago for 3 days for another Summit Connect lab event. And then I get to come home. So it's going to be really hectic. Honestly, this is the first time I'm traveling for work. It's just weird how everything kind of compressed and piled on top of itself.
Of course.
Yeah. It is what it is. I'm sure it'll be it'll be fine.
Oof.
But that's still a little ways out. I say that. Let me look at the calendar. It's still a little ways out. I've still got some time. They still haven't come back and told me the use cases they want for that hackathon. So they're compressing the amount of time I have to build everything. But most of the components are there. So shouldn't be too terrible.
I've got cert fever again.
Do you? I just recently found out that I'm probably going to have to get certifications for my job now too. So, awesome.
Which ones?
I don't know. They haven't told us yet. I'm assuming. I'm assuming, yeah, they'll want me to have Ansible ones, but maybe like some cloud provider certifications. I don't know. And then, you know, how do you pick which cloud provider? And maybe they'll say, well, we need this one from all. You know, this one from that cloud provider, this one from that one. I don't know. Who knows what's going to happen? I don't worry about it. I just worry about the things that I can control or whatever and let go of the other one. So when it comes to me, it'll come to me. I've played the certification game for 19 years now. So, you know, what's one or two or three more of those things? No big deal.
I like certs. Certs are fun.
Yeah, I used to think so too, and I would learn a lot. But I think of all the things I'd rather do with my time now, and they don't seem as important.
Yeah.
I just like learning. So, and also right now, and it has been since the pandemic, a lot of the Pearson certification stuff is just totally online. You just pay and you allocate the time. So I want to try to take the CCNA in a couple weeks, and then next year I want to try to get one of the CCNPs, and then also the GNCIA for Junos. Get some Juniper stuff too, just cause.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, keep pushing, man.
What do you use for your studying materials for that stuff?
Well, I mean, now you've got virtualization everywhere, so
yeah.
Usually cert manuals and just taking MikroTik topologies and trying to rebuild them all in a different operating system. I mean, it's all the same design, just different CLI. So, and then you have to learn the proprietary stuff. Like Cisco's got like their wireless controller that's included now. And there's a lot of DevNet stuff, which I'm really interested in. So we'll see how that goes. I think it's fun. And I'm like stagnating right now. So I'm like, you got to learn new stuff. You got to
get
new stuff. Yeah.
Gotcha. I hear you. That's, yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. That's why I started a blog, because I was getting bored. And then I started consulting. And then the podcast, not necessarily because I was bored, but it helped alleviate it. Yeah. I get it. It's cool. All right, guys. I haven't eaten dinner. It's been a long day. You good to put a fork in it?
Yeah, I'm ready for go get some dinner too.
All right. So, Tommy C, how would you have people get a hold of you out on the interwebs?
You can email me at tommy@lostcreek.tech, or just go to my website, lostcreek.tech. Or you can be awesome and help support the chaos, Mike and Greg and all everyone else around here, and the troublemaking that we do. And join the Brothers Wisp Slack, become a Patreon supporter. And make the world a possibly better place with our contributions.
I hear you. All right, Nick Arellano, or the Lano, as I like to know, like to reference you. I've never said that once in my life.
Yeah, you can reach out to me at my email at nick.a@hey.com, and also the Little Brothers Wisp Slack group. I'm usually always creeping in there 24/7, don't sleep. So Join us.
All I heard was, I'm there 24/7 watching you. Come on. Yeah. Come in. That's not creepy at all.
Free candy.
All right. You can find me, Greg, at gregsoul.com. I blog pretty regularly now at gregsoul.com. You can also slide into my DMs in the Little Brothers Wisp Slack. That's patreon.com/TheBrothersWisp. You can get a hold of me. One last note from me. It kind of coincides with the time of year where I generally do this thing anyway, but I'm a little bit late this year. Anyway, long story short, I had a really close friend of mine, way too young, pass away last week. And luckily, you know, before he went, I was able to tell him how much he meant to me and that I cared about him. And it's never, it may feel like it's never a good time to do that with people, but I say, you know, no time like the present. It's never going to seem like some potentially right time. So whenever you get a chance, take people you care about, you care about them. And they'll reciprocate. Let them surprise you. And if it makes them uncomfortable, which most people I tell it does, it's not about them. It's about you. And it's good that that they know it and that they hear you say it. So from you guys, thank you for listening. I genuinely appreciate it. Thank you guys for coming on the cast, Tommy and Nick. I genuinely appreciate having you folks in my life. And you make it better when we are in pandemics or when the sun is shining, either way. Although it seems to be shining. I didn't go outside today, and it's not shining right now. But it will be tomorrow. So thanks, everybody, and we'll see you next time.
Take care.
Now I hit stop, which is Tommy's favorite thing for me to say. I told somebody the other day that I was gonna put the click stop me saying that.